This is Brave Little State from Vermont Public and the NPR Network. I'm Josh Crane. Every episode of the show starts with a question that's been asked by you, our audience. And today, just in time for ski season, we have a question from Nathan Evans, who lives in New York and skis in Vermont.
How has Vail's acquisition of ski resorts in Vermont affected locals?
Vail Resorts is a global multi-million dollar resort company based in Colorado. And it's moved into Vermont in a major way, buying up three resorts here between 2017 and 2019. Our story begins near one of those resort towns on the eastern flank of the Green Mountains. Reporter Sabine Pooks takes it from here.
Every fall and every spring, Lisa Mugford and 20 of her girlfriends gather for a weekend at the Echo Lake Inn in Ludlow. The inn is a short ride away from Okemo Mountain, one of the more than 40 resorts that Vail now owns around the world. When I run into the group of friends, completely by accident, by the way, they're sitting in a circle of rocking chairs on the inn's porch, in varying levels of layers, pretty typical for 3 p.m. in mid-October. I settle into an empty rocking chair to chat.
You're here for a retreat?
Yeah.
It's Sunday.
It's 22 of us.
That's a lot of people.
Some of the group lives in Lamoille County, in and around Stowe, another resort that Vail owns. So when I mentioned to Lisa that I'm reporting a story about the company's impact in Vermont, she has a lot to say.
Our business is about halfway up the mountain road where they go skiing. And on the busy or holiday weekends, it literally takes people probably 3 hours to get up to the mountain.
Lisa owns Stowe Beverage, a liquor store a few miles from the resort.
Yeah, I've had people leave their car running in the mountain road in line and come in and get liquor and go back.
It's that bad.
At times, yeah. On the weekends, yes. I mean, the restaurants have all just changed drastically too. Posh an arm and a leg to go out to eat.
Yeah. Which keeps the locals away, I believe.
Chiming in is Dawn Lefebvre, a home health nurse who lives in Johnson. Dawn and her parents used to all work at the mountain. These days, she avoids Stowe because of how it's changed.
Like, when I go there, the whole mountainside has all these big, condominium-style houses, and it just looks very commercial instead of the beautiful hills that we used to have and all the trees. Mm. You know, it just looks so much different now.
Mm-hmm. I think they're just trying to make it more like Colorado. Yeah.
Diane Zaride is sitting in the rocking chair to Dawn's right. She lives in Stowe.
People have this fantasy, I think, in the city about Stowe, Vermont. And it's this magical place, but they I don't know, it seems like they have this image in their head, some of these tourists, you know. Everything started changing, getting more fancy and more expensive to match the tourism that's gonna draw. And with that comes more money for the town, but I don't know if the locals will ever see the benefit of that.
This is how a lot of conversations about Vail go. And sometimes they're more like rants. You'll see a lot of Vail hate on the internet and on angry bumper stickers in ski town parking lots. People bemoan the impacts of large numbers of tourists descending on relatively small towns, including the big boom in second homes and tourist-catered short-term rentals up and down the Green Mountains. One local I talked to said that, for people who live in Stowe, Vail is a, quote, four-letter word. On the other hand, people in the industry point to how Vail has made skiing more affordable. While day prices have gone up, season pass prices have dropped by a lot. But there's also another impact I heard from people, something a lot more intangible, a general sense of change that's harder to pinpoint. Take it from Vermont's own Noah Kahn. In his song Paul Revere, he laments that, quote, Vail bought the mountains and nothing was the same. In other words, as Dawn at the Echo Lake puts it,
One thing you can count on is change.
Change, when we come back.
Support for Brave Little State comes from Northshire Bookstore, with books, gifts, vinyl records, and more for all ages. Located in Manchester, Vermont, Saratoga Springs, New York, and online at northshire.com. And Efficiency Vermont, proud sponsor of Drive Electric Vermont. Information about charging on the road, model comparisons, and rebates is at driveelectricvermont.com.
Like any story about change, this one, about Vail's ascent in Vermont, it relies on some nostalgia for how things were back in the day, when Vermont was practically bespeckled with ski hills.
And the ski hill was what a basketball court or a tennis court is to recreation today. Every town had one.
This is Lisa Lynn. She edits Vermont Ski and Ride, a skiing magazine based in Middlebury.
It was sort of where you went in the winter. It was your social life. It was your exercise. It was your, you know, chance for glory if you raced or competed in any way.
Vermont's earliest legit ski hills, meaning you didn't have to walk up yourself, they opened in the 1930s, and they were serviced by motorized rope tows that would pull you up the mountain. Still, they were pretty DIY, according to Poppy Gall, a lifelong Vermont skier.
A lot of them were on the farmer's back 40. They weren't particularly steep.
Poppy's a board member at the Vermont Ski and Snowboard Museum in Stowe.
You could drop your kid off at the tow and give them a quarter for hot chocolate or two hot chocolates and just leave them.
Poppy curated an exhibit here at the museum about Vermont's more than 180 lost-to-time ski areas.
Every little area had its own sort of uniqueness and flavor, and that really comes out when you do the research.
Like a rope tow in Island Pond that was powered by an old sawmill motor. The guy who owned the place converted his sugar house into a makeshift day lodge. But these hills weren't just catering to locals. Also in the 30s, there were these things called snow trains that brought skiers up from Grand Central in New York and South Station in Boston to towns like Manchester, Rutland, and Waterbury. Poppy says Vermont residents welcomed the influx of people and the dollars they brought. They opened their barns to house them and started inns.
Towns like Stowe were really sleepy little towns, not much going on. But this really changed. Skiing really changed everything.
Skiing took off. By the mid-1960s, locally owned and operated ski areas in Vermont were booming. And then things started to change.
And then we had some bad winters.
I think the skiers outgrew the rope tows because of their equipment and their interest.
The cost of insurance went way up.
Liability insurance increased again and again and again, and they couldn't afford it. They couldn't afford their operations.
Some mountains shut down when the state started doing safety inspections. Those quirks that made Vermont's early DIY mountains so charming, they didn't all pass muster with the state.
And running a ski area wasn't very profitable anyway, so I think a lot of those people just folded. A lot of those areas just folded.
By the late 1990s, there were only 20 Vermont ski mountains left. Over the past three decades, those 20 mountains have more or less stuck around. It hasn't been easy. In that time, it's become even more expensive to operate ski mountains, in part because of those rising insurance costs, as well as expensive upgrades to lifts and snowmaking equipment that skiers have come to expect. And skiers have come to expect higher prices, too. Many ski mountains, once like the basketball courts of their towns, have become more like luxury vacation destinations. One way some of them have stayed afloat is by turning to a new tactic, consolidation. Mountains buying up one another. In Vermont, perhaps the most notable of these acquisitions was in 2017.
After months of rumors, it wasn't a surprise to many, but the official announcement came today that Colorado's Vail Resorts intends to buy Stowe Mountain Resort. The price tag, $50 million.
Vail Resorts started as one ski mountain in Colorado. In the 90s and early 2000s, it went public and started slowly buying up other ski mountains out west. But it wasn't until 2008 that the company made a decision that would change everything. That year, Vail introduced what it calls its Epic Pass. It gives skiers access to all of its areas for the price of one, as long as they buy it early, in April, May, and June, months when American ski resorts were not really bringing in revenue. That system also protects Vail from winters that are becoming increasingly varied as a result of climate change, since it requires skiers to commit early. And not only do those passes open up access to tons of ski areas, they're also a lot cheaper than traditional one-resort season tickets. The year that Vail bought Stowe, for example, the price of a season pass was more than sliced in half.
Now that base Epic Pass is only up to about $850, so it's still incredibly affordable compared to what a season pass used to be at any given mountain, like Stowe, for example, which used to be over $2,000.
Parker Reilly is the former longtime president of the trade association, Ski Vermont. He says that change in price brought a lot of people into the sport.
I could see it personally, the crowds that you didn't see before, the number of people, the demographic of folks who weren't typically your frequent flyers and skiers at Stowe Mountain Resort.
A year after Vail bought Stowe, it bought Okemo in Ludlow. And a year after that, Mount Snow in Dover. Both were added to the Epic Pass. And now there's another big ski company with a combined pass, Alterra Mountain Company, which, like Vail, is based in Colorado, and which also owns ski resorts in Vermont, Sugarbush and Stratton. Alterra's pass is called the Icon Pass. Together, Vail and Alterra account for a quarter of commercial ski resort ownership here in the state. Now, if you're wondering whether those numbers might be enough to get the attention of federal regulators, the answer is probably not. Regulators have investigated Vail for potential antitrust violations before, but those sorts of investigations are usually focused on keeping companies from totally screwing customers with high prices. In this instance, consolidation is actually driving costs for consumers down. And at least right now, Vail doesn't seem all that interested in picking up any more resorts in Vermont. These days, it's turning its focus to new markets abroad, like resorts in Switzerland and Japan. So more people these days are skiing on those more affordable season passes that Vail and other companies are offering. And Parker, the former Ski Trade Association president, he says the pandemic also brought new skiers into the sport.
And so the last 2 years with the Vermont ski areas, we've been at 4.1 million skier visits, which is typically kind of the upper end for our 10 to 15 year average.
From the industry perspective, of course, this addition of new skiers and snowboarders is positive. But on the community side of things, this is where a lot of the heartache originates. Like those lines up the mountain road that Lisa Mugford mentioned when I spoke to her at the inn. Stowe has actually created a new paid parking pass system to address that traffic problem, to encourage carpooling and busing instead. But that program, too, has drawn consternation from locals, who are annoyed about having to pay for parking without being guaranteed a spot. And speaking of locals, several who I spoke with for this story said it's not just more people that are visiting the mountain. It's different people. One innkeeper in Ludlow told me that these days he sees a lot more young professionals coming to visit than families. The multipass system, it caters to frequent skiers who can travel to take advantage of other resorts on the pass and who make their plans early before the season starts. It's not nearly as good a deal for people who want to just get in a day or two here and there. Walk-up lift ticket prices have gone up tremendously.
And I think that it's definitely brought more of a tourist and people who are here for the amenities and all of that and not actually for the sport of skiing.
Ivan Tai grew up in Middlebury and now lives in Duxbury. I met him in the parking lot of Stowe before the mountain opened.
In my mind, this was always like a home mountain for like really good skiers. And I think there are fewer and fewer of those type of skiers on the mountain as a percentage of the overall skiing public here.
Ivan had a season pass at Stowe long before it was owned by Vail. And he took a few seasons off as season pass prices climbed. But a few years back, he got a good deal on an Epic Pass and got an Icon Pass, too. And he says even with all the ways the mountain has changed, he feels like he gets more bang for his buck.
I mean, if anything, it's opened up in some ways more terrain.
Like last year, Ivan had to go to Utah for work. And he got in some days of skiing at one of the Utah resorts on the pass. Vail is turning the money from its pass sales into more efficient snowmaking equipment and better chairlifts. It outsourced some jobs to its Broomfield, Colorado office, and earlier this fall announced a round of layoffs for its corporate staff. But it's also kept a lot of longtime mountain staff on, like Bruce Schmidt, the longtime general manager at Okemo, who grew up skiing at the ski school there.
Sometimes you have to do things a little bit differently, and sometimes, change is hard. You got to work through it. But I think really we've worked through that really well and continue to do these programs that are important and support the organizations that are important to the communities that we're in.
Undoubtedly, one of the biggest effects of growth in Vermont's ski towns has been on the housing market. It's difficult to parse the impact of the post-COVID real estate boom from the Vail effect. But from recent regional and local housing assessments, it's absolutely clear that the housing market has changed dramatically in the last several years, especially in resort towns. Those towns have seen some of the greatest recent growth in short-term rentals. In the last 3 years, for example, short-term rentals have more than doubled in Windham County, which is home to Mount Snow. In Stowe, short-term rentals and seasonal housing combined make up more than half of the total housing stock, leaving a dearth of affordable housing for the town's growing population. And these days, the average appraised value for a house there ranges between $1 million and $2 million, according to an assessment done by Stowe this year. And the resorts themselves have scrambled to find housing solutions for their workers in the tight market. A few years ago, Vail purchased a property about a mile from Okemo Mountain that it's used to house employees there. These growth spurts and growing pains tell a familiar tale of a place that's settling into more. More money, more visitors, more second homes. But there's another variable that doesn't come across in the data. Something that, in some ways, is more about an overall vibe than anything else.
What people started to see at Stowe and Okemo and Mount Snow was what some people started calling a McVailing of skiing.
A McVailing. That's when we come back.
Brave Little State has support from Passumpsic Bank. Whether you're exploring options for a commercial equipment purchase or refinance of a new money loan, Passumpsic Bank can help you navigate your choices. Apply now through January 31st, 2025 to take advantage of special rates. More info at bankofthewild.com. Member FDIC, loans are subject to credit approval. Limited time offer.
Welcome back to Brave Little State, where we're talking about Vail Resorts and what's changed here in Vermont since they arrived. Well, there's one aspect of the change that's a lot harder to quantify, and that caught the attention of ski journalist Lisa Lin when Vail started buying mountains here.
I think there was sort of a general trolling on the internet of Vail Resorts. And people were really ready to jump all over Vail for pretty much anything.
In 2022, Lisa wrote a piece for Vermont Ski and Ride called Why Is Everyone So Angry at Vail Resorts? And she honed in on this one element that, in Vermont, seemed to be drawing a lot of angst. Consistency.
You know, there's a real kind of consistency to the product that is being offered. And it feels more like a product. So just in the way that if you go to a McDonald's in Vermont or McDonald's in Colorado or McDonald's in California, you're going to get the same kind of burger. What people started to see at Stowe and Okemo and Mount Snow was what some people started calling a McVailing of skiing.
A McVailing of skiing. The resort's websites started to look the same. The lifts were getting upgrades. Lisa noticed that at Stowe, the Summit Cafe stopped serving local coffee and started serving Starbucks instead. changes that might seem pretty harmless, maybe even more convenient.
But there was also a loss of the individuality. And I think just the loss of individuality that many of these ski areas had really hit home for many people, particularly Vermonters.
It's a blustery Sunday afternoon in the parking lot of Stowe Mountain Resort. In just a few days, this lot will be mobbed with visitors. But today, a week before the mountain is open for the season, there are just a dozen or so cars here, all with green license plates. It's a little like turning back the clock. There are no crowds, no running express lifts, no passes. From the backs of their cars, skiers stick skins onto their skis and split boards so they can hike up and ride down the one trail with just enough snow to make the effort worth it.
I skin a lot just because it's close by and I can do it before work a lot of times, but...
Keila Henry lives about 20 minutes away in Morrisville. She grew up in Stowe.
The mountain had a much chiller vibe before. Like, you kind of just came up, skied your runs, a lot sort of like more of the ski bum life.
Keila says now the sense of community and friendliness has changed. People are clamoring to get to the first chair, to be the first one on the new snow. And while she can't exactly put her finger on why the vibe has shifted, she says it's enough that she doesn't buy a pass here anymore.
So I actually drive to Jay now because it's sort of like a 2000s Stowe vibe and everyone's just having fun and everyone's happy and everyone's hooting and hollering on a powder day and no one's upset with each other. And I really like that. And I don't have to wait in line when I'm driving, even though it's a little further. I don't have to wait in traffic.
Another impact of Vail's presence in Vermont, it's pushed some skiers right back to that old school style of skiing, the kind of local hill vibe that was so characteristic of Vermont's earliest ski areas. Skiers are heading to Jay Peak, to Bolton Valley, and those ski areas are taking a page right out of Vail's book, with their own multi-resort pass for independent mountains, appropriately dubbed the Indy Pass. And for maximum nostalgia, there are still some mom-and-pop rope toes, like Cochran's Ski Area and Northeast Slopes, which have been able to stay alive thanks to various combinations of donations, town support, and good old-fashioned community enthusiasm.
Reporter Sabine Pooks. By the way, the museum exhibit about Vermont's bygone ski areas opens the day after this episode comes out on December 6th. You can find details in the show notes for this episode. Thanks for listening to the show, and thanks to Nathan Evans for the great question. If you're hearing this and you appreciate Brave Little State, which if you're listening to the credits, I think there's a good chance you do, please, please subscribe or follow BLS in your favorite podcast app. And give us a 5-star review while you're at it in Apple Podcasts or Spotify. If you do, I might even read your review on the show, like this one from reviewer Neverboard, who writes, "Never miss a podcast. Always so well done, high-quality journalism." Neverboard, thanks for that review. For more high-quality journalism, or to submit your own questions about Vermont, head on over to bravelittlestate.org. This episode was reported by Sabine Pooks. It was produced and edited by me, Josh Crane, and Burgess Brown. Digital support from Sophie Stevens. Angela Evansy is Brave Little State's executive producer. Our theme music is by Ty Gibbons. Other music by Blue Dot Sessions. Special thanks to Laura Nakasaka, Nina Keck, Abigail Giles, Robert Parrish, Jason Blevins, Tom Ginola, Lindsay DeLaurier, and Izzy Mitchell. Brave Little State is a production of Vermont Public and a proud member of the NPR network. We'll be back soon with more listener-powered Vermont journalism. Until then...
We could all use a little help navigating the news these days. The Consider This podcast wants to give you a hand. 6 days a week, we'll help you make sense of the day's biggest news story and what it means for you in less than 15 minutes. Listen now to the Consider This podcast from NPR.